This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Republicans vow to change course on health care, spending and taxes. Democrats vow to fight on. Both sides call for the other side to cooperate. It's Wednesday and time for a double dose of the political junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
But I'm the decider.
Every Wednesday, NPR political editor Ken Rudin joins us to talk about the week in politics. This week, we will not let him leave. This hour, we focus on what happens next in the next few months when the new Congress convenes in January and over the next 2 years. Linda Chavez and Kelly Goff will join us in a moment. Later, GOP Congressman Jeff Flake and David Dreyer explain how they plan to wield their majority. And we will also go ahead and take a look ahead to 2012. But first, what change do you expect as a result of yesterday's elections? Split lines today. If you voted Republican, the number is 800-344-3893. Again, 800-344-3893 if you voted Republican. If you voted Democratic, 800-344-3864. Again, Democrats call 800-344-3864. Everybody can email us. The address is talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. Just go to npr.org, click on Talk of the Nation. And Ken, looking ahead, first, a lame duck session of Congress, which is going to have to focus, for one thing, on the Bush tax cuts.
Exactly. That's what Republicans are insisting on. And President Obama at the press conference this morning was asked whether he would be willing to compromise. Just maybe it's people making $1 million, you know, over $1 million don't get the tax cuts. Those are one of the things that the Republicans, the newly emboldened Republicans, have laid down. And it depends on whether, obviously, it depends on whether the president and the Democrats will accede to that.
What happens in a lame duck session? Clearly, the old Congress is still there. Nancy Pelosi is still Speaker of the House. The Republicans are in the minority, but they are saying, wait a minute, you have to listen to the voters.
That's exactly right. And that there could be, you know, as much as recrimination and bad feelings we saw in the waning days of the campaign, you're going to probably see it a lame duck because Republicans are going to say, well, wait a second, we cleaned up on November 2nd, and here we have Democrats in charge in the lame duck. So it probably will be a lot of acrimony.
Well, let's bring some analysts in on the conversation. Linda Chavez, chair of the Center for Equal Opportunity and a syndicated columnist. She served in both the Reagan and George H.W. Bush administration and joins us by phone from Virginia. Nice to have you back on the program.
Great to be with you.
And can Republicans legitimately claim a mandate from yesterday?
I think we can. I think Republicans did very, very well and better than many people expected. They didn't quite win the Senate, but I think their numbers have increased enough that they're going to be able to stop the Democrats from some of the mischief that they've been up to over the last 2 years, which the voters didn't agree with.
And one of those things of mischief, as you would describe it, I'm sure, is denying the extension of the tax cuts to those making over $250,000 a year.
Well, that's right. I think you will see a broad-based tax cut, at least an extension. Maybe it will be 1 year. Maybe it will be longer of the Bush tax cuts. I think most economists believe that you don't raise taxes, even on the rich, during a recession. And so I think you're likely to see that come through. If not in the lame duck, it will certainly come through as an item of business early in the new session.
Kelly Goff is a political analyst and author, a contributor to the Loop21.com, and she's with us here in Studio 3A. Nice to have you back on the program.
Great to be back.
And there is all sorts of parts of President Obama's agenda that a lot of people would like to see move ahead. Progressives, very disappointed. They did not get Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the first 2 years.
Right.
Is any of this going to be moving ahead?
Well, you know, look, I think about the only good news from the shellacking is they did hold on to the Senate. But of course, we know that the House is incredibly important when it comes to actually getting things through. So that's a very long-winded way to say that I hate to break it to progressives, but I don't think that the next 2 years are going to be looking a lot better than the last 2 years. So if you weren't happy with those, good news, the sequel's worse. You know, I will quote Bill Cosby here, though. He once said that if you're making everyone happy, you're doing something wrong. So the good news for the president is he must be doing a lot of stuff right, because progressives are unhappy, conservatives are unhappy, and apparently, according to yesterday, independents aren't so happy either. So I guess in terms of his legacy and getting stuff done, he's you know, doing something right.
We saw a fascinating poll published in the New York Times just at the end of the campaign about the Obama coalition. And among those who came out very strongly, of course, to support him last time around, Hispanics from African-Americans and, of course, young people. And from what we're gathering so far in terms of what it looked like, Latinos did come out and vote yesterday. Mm-hmm. Young people, not so much.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I write about this group quite a bit. And so here's what's fascinating. I like to say that the Democrats had two major, major problems yesterday. Major problem number one was a candidate whose name wasn't even on the ballot, and that's Barack Obama, because there are a lot of voters who, to put it diplomatically, just are not fans of the president right now. And we're talking particularly older voters, older white voters, and they vote. They're not like young people who vote sometimes and not others. The second biggest problem, though, Democrats faced is the fact that Barack Obama's name wasn't on the ballot. And that's because there are a lot of voters, part of the Democratic base, younger voters and voters of color who are extremely loyal to President Obama, but his name wasn't on the ballot. And it's really hard to be a Democrat in a conservative district who looks at a black voter and says, come on, a vote for me is a vote for the president's agenda, when you're then turning around and criticizing the president's agenda to try to win older white voters. And I think that's what ultimately proved to be a problem with those two groups, black voters and younger voters.
Let's get to
it. Just like to say that there is a little bit of a cloud hanging over the Republican victory last night. It's one you won't hear about from a lot of Republican analysts, and that has to do with Latino voters. It was a very interesting night last evening. You had a huge victory for Republican Latino candidates, two governorships and a Senate seat, won by Republican Hispanics. On the other hand, Hispanics may very well have been the decisive vote that deprived the Republicans of defeating Harry Reid. You had Sharon Engel, who decided to get off message, not to talk about the expansion of government, not to talk about things like health care, but to start anti-immigrant bashing. And frankly, she got less, 60,000 votes less than Brian Sandoval, the Republican candidate for governor. And so that may have actually been as a result of Hispanic turnout. And I think you could also point to the loss of the Senate seat in the state of Colorado as perhaps owing to the fact that you had a very large anti-Republican vote among Hispanics because of Tom Tancredo's presence on the gubernatorial race, and that may actually have again sort of ironically hurt Ken Buck, who is running for Senate.
But Linda, you also saw in Arizona, for example, Jan Brewer, who signed the controversial anti-immigrant law, won overwhelming re-election, actually election, because she this is the first time she'd run. And we saw two Democratic incumbents in Arizona get knocked out, Ann Kirkpatrick and Harry Mitchell, also because of the immigration issue.
Well, I think that's right, but I think that Arizona is a sort of a special case. I mean, it is the front lines in the immigration wars. I think Republicans ought to consider seriously whether or not they ought to sort of get ahead of the wave and perhaps consider supporting legal immigration reform. I think the difficult issue is what to do about the 12 million or so illegal immigrants who are here. But frankly, I think the country as a whole is very much in favor of moving forward with changes in legal immigration laws that would make it easier to allow people to come here legally to work. And I think the Republicans, if they want to be the majority party for the future, they're going to have to figure out a way to win larger numbers of Hispanic votes.
You're talking about the old John McCain strategy.
Well, I am talking about what George W. Bush had proposed. I thought it was good policy then. I think it's good policy now. And, you know, it's conceivable that immigration really wasn't a big issue in most states. And as I say, I think in states where it became an issue, where you have large Hispanic populations, it did not redound to the benefit of the Republicans.
Kelly, do you agree?
I'm nodding because I'm in wholehearted agreement with her. I mean, I you know, look, I wasn't the only person who labeled Sharon Engel's ad the Willie Horton ad of this year, and that's not a compliment.
Well, the Aqua Buddha ad became the Aqua Buddha ad of this year,
well,
but that's another case.
That too, right, yes. But no, and that's not, you know, that's not a badge of honor. So, and I think that Linda's completely right on that. Look, Hispanic Americans are going to become the majority in this country. What's fascinating is the Republicans had a really great night in terms of diversity. I said that in my piece. It's up on The Loop in the Huffington Post today, which is that in terms of, you know, Nikki Haley, first Asian American woman governor, Susana Martinez, first Latina woman governor, Alan West, Tim Scott, African American GOP congressman. But she's right. There was this cloud in that when push came to shove in certain races, they played the race card, only it wasn't played against African Americans this time. It was played against Hispanic Americans.
Let's get some callers in on the conversation. We'll start with Steve. Steve calling on the Republican line from Cincinnati.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead.
Well, the changes here, Strickland was out.
The governor.
Yes, and then John Boehner is right here out of Cincinnati. He's a speaker. And then, of course, in my district, District 1, Driehaus was defeated by Shabbat. Shabbat ran for 14 years, and they got him back in.
Well, the Republican elected again from that district, Driehaus, the Democrat, defeated.
Yes, sir.
And as you look ahead, what change do you expect?
Maybe Obama will recognize, I don't know if he'll do what Clinton did, you know, go to the center. I'm sure that's what they're pushing him towards. Will the Republicans be, you know, magnanimous and, you know, work with the Democrats, or will they be, gridlock?
Two questions
hoping,
there, Steve.
That it'll be the other way.
All right. Kelly Goff, do you think the president is going to move to the center?
I actually hope that the White House is listening, because I think that and the new heads of Congress, because I think that that caller just encapsulates exactly what a lot of voters feel, the frustration on both sides. And so I think it's incredibly important that we not have what happened back in 95, in which we ended up having a government shutdown because both sides didn't want to work together. And I think that's the cautionary tale for the White House. The last thing I'd say is I wrote a piece criticizing, saying that it's actually better for Obama to possibly lose one of the houses because it would push him to the center like Clinton did, which got Clinton reelected.
And Linda Chavez, are Republicans going to be willing to work with him if he does move?
I think Republicans do not want to have a government shutdown. I think that was a bit of overreaching back in the mid-90s, and I think it did not help Republicans. So I think they do want to get some things done. It's just a different set of things that they're going to want to get done than the Obama administration. What is not clear to me, though, Neil, is whether or not Barack Obama really is Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton, after all, was part of the Democratic Leadership Council. He was a much more centrist, much more moderate Democrat. I think Barack Obama is, in fact, a committed progressive. He is about trying to change this nation, moving it more to be much more similar to some of the social democracies in Western Europe. And I think he's quite ideological. So it's not clear to me that he is going to be able to bring himself to do what Bill Clinton did, only time will tell.
Linda Chavez, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
Linda Chavez, chairman of the Virginia-based Center for Equal Opportunity and a syndicated columnist. Our thanks as well to Kelly Goff, political analyst and contributor to the Huffington Post. She joined us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much. When we come back, we'll talk with two Republican members of Congress. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. President Obama described the outcome of yesterday's election as a shellacking. Republicans say that gives them a mandate to roll back what they see as excesses of the Obama administration. We're talking today about the results and what they mean going forward for Republicans and Democrats in Congress and for the White House. What change do you expect as a result of yesterday's elections? Split lines today. If you voted Republican, you can call us at 800-344-3893. Again, that's 800-344-3893. For Republicans, Democrats, dial 800-344-3864. Again, Democrats, call 800-344-3864. Everybody can email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. We're joined now by one of the people who will help oversee the changes in Congress, Congressman Jeff Flake, a Republican from Arizona, and he joins us on the phone from Mesa. And Congressman Flake, congratulations on re-election yesterday.
Hey, well, thank you. It's nice to be re-elected.
And what do you expect going forward, first in this lame duck session?
Well, we don't know. There are a lot of people who are worried, a lot of Republicans worried that some of the major items, card check, immigration reform, where other things might be pushed during that time. I think that's extremely difficult. I think more likely we're going to see a large omnibus spending bill that will include a lot of items that we probably would rather not spend money on.
And as you look ahead, some in the Tea Party movement, which, of course, won some outstanding successes yesterday, they demand a balanced budget, lower taxes, and some say they will not compromise on issues like raising the debt ceiling. Are the Tea Party candidates who won going to face a different reality once they get to Washington? Do you think they're going to be able to sustain that position?
Well, I hope they maintain the same fire that they were elected with, because that tends to dissipate all too quickly in Washington. So the longer they can keep that, the better. It's going to be difficult, having said that, to to when you face something like the debt limit. I mean, we're borrowing 41 cents on the dollar right now. To be able to eliminate that in 1 year, or in the next few months before we have to raise the debt ceiling, is probably not going to be possible. And so we're going to be faced with a dilemma here. How do we convince people that we're serious about moving ahead on spending when we haven't been too good in the past?
Ken?
Congressman, I know that John Boehner would rather be Speaker than Minority Leader, and of course he does have a lot of goals and problems ahead of him, but you've been the kind of Republican who never accepted politics as usual. You didn't like the kind of establishment, the way the Republican leadership did their thing, and that's one of the reasons the Republicans were defeated in 2006 and 2008. But now you have a whole class of Republicans coming in who really don't owe allegiance to anyone. I mean, except for the people, of course. But I mean, how is Boehner? How are the Republicans going to manage their own caucus, let alone go after Obama and the Democrats?
With great difficulty. I think that you cannot underestimate the difficulty that's going to come with trying to corral this bunch. I think that's certainly a healthy situation to have people come with an outside perspective because the certainly the go-along to get-along attitude that we've had as Republicans for far too long has to be challenged. But that doesn't minimize the task that Speaker Boehner will have.
And how confrontational do you think Republicans ought to be? We've seen Daryl Issa say he's going to be showering the White House with subpoenas. Is that an appropriate way to go?
Well, I think all of us should proceed with caution in terms of what might be viewed and what would be kind of witch hunts going on. And I'm sure that Daryl Issa will be careful of that. We saw too much of that in the 90s. There are plenty of areas that we need to study, that we need to look at, where the agencies have moved forward without congressional authorization. There are plenty of hearings to be held, plenty of things to do legitimately without going on witch hunts.
Yesterday's election, it looks like the Republicans are going to pick up 60, if not 61 House seats. That's the most they've picked up since 1938. Was it a victory for the Republican Party, or was it just a defeat for the Democrats? And a rejection of the Democrats.
Well, I think, the pollsters told us, months ago, the bad news is they still don't like you out there. The good news is it's not about you. And so I don't think we ought to delude ourselves into thinking that this was some great affirmation of what we've done. I think we have got a second chance here. We've got to convince people that we'll not only do better than the Democrats have done, but we'll do better than we did before, not too long ago. And that's a tall order.
Let's see if we get a caller in on the conversation. Let's go to the Democrat line, and this is Deborah calling us from Austin, Texas.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Actually, I'd like to talk a little bit about state politics instead of national politics in terms of change. I'm pleased to report that I'm one of the few people left voting for Democrat, Lloyd Doggett, who has represented me for as long as I've lived here in Travis County, was reelected. But he was one of the few Democrats to retain his seat last night in Texas. And for the first time since anybody can remember, the Republicans have a two-thirds majority in the state house. And we have a $25 billion, that's with a B, state deficit. We have schools that are unable to raise their property taxes, and we're hearing no new taxes from the Texas legislature, and we have a large Hispanic population. And so I think I'm curious as to what your panel thinks about what's going to happen in Texas, and Texas tends to be sort of a bellwether for the nation. When things start to change in Texas, they start to change elsewhere. How do we deal with, a huge budget deficit without working with the federal government? Our leadership has said they'll take no federal funds, and maintain jobs and employment without social services and education in Texas.
And Ken Rudin, Texas is in fact one of the states, as bad as Deborah describes it, they're better off.
Well, yes, it's true. But I mean, the gubernatorial candidate White, the former mayor of Dallas, Houston, tried to make the case that Rick Perry overstayed his welcome, that there are problems that the Republicans and the Republican leadership are ignoring, Rick Perry being governor longer than anybody else in history. It was a referendum on the Republican rule, and yet according to the numbers, people in Texas were pretty happy with what they had.
And Jeff Flake, let me put this to you as well. One of the things the Obama administration did in its second, if you want to describe it that way, they wouldn't, stimulus package was to send money to the states to hire teachers and policemen and firemen and that sort of thing. Is that going to be possible in this next part of Congress?
Absolutely not. I think that's coming from Arizona, I think we gladly trade places with Texas right now in terms of our own budget problems. But I don't think the states can look to Washington for any solution. What hopefully the states can look for is some relief on future expenses. And if the health care bill is implemented as planned, I can tell you that will put states like Arizona, Texas, you name it, just about every state in deficit to the tune of, in Arizona's case, more than $1 billion a year in addition to everything that's going on. So I think the best states can hope for is some kind of relief from future expenses.
The speaker-to-be, John Boehner, called health care a monstrosity, said it needs to be repealed and replaced. The president said, let's not spend the next 2 years fighting over the legislative acts of the last 2 years. Is health care reform going to be as much a part of the next 2 years as it was the last 2 years?
I think it has to be. You can put all questions about, you know, individual mandates and whatever else at the federal level or the individual level aside and just realize that at the state level, we simply can't afford this. The maintenance of effort requirements, the matching funds that will have to be provided will put already strapped state legislatures over the brink. And so it would be all well and good to put those discussions aside, but we can't physically. We simply can't.
Congressman Flake, thanks very much for your time today. Again, congratulations on your reelection.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Jeff Flake, a Republican from Arizona, joined us on the phone from Mesa. And we're going to turn now to Congressman David Dreyer, a Republican from California, the current ranking member of the Rules Committee. A lot of people say he's the once and future chairman of the Rules Committee. And Congressman Dreyer, nice to have you back. Congratulations on your reelection.
Well, thank you very much, Neil. And I understand that you're sitting there with the man. I say Michael Barone is the Ken Rudin of television. Is that
the pictures are better on the radio. Let me put
David,
that up.
David Dreyer, David Dreyer has long looked to me for guidance. That's
yeah,
true.
Ken's got a face made for radio, right?
Absolutely, and a haberdashery as well. But anyway, getting back to what do you plan to do? What do you think is going to happen in this next lame duck session of Congress, particularly as you look ahead to the question of the Bush tax cuts?
Well, first, let me say, Neil, I want to express my appreciation to the people of California for giving me the opportunity to serve. And the message is a loud and clear one. We know that this was not a message of support for Republicans. It was a mandate to ensure that we focus on job creation and economic growth. And there is bipartisan consensus. And I was encouraged by the words of the president today who said that we needed to address this issue in the lame duck session. There is a bipartisan consensus to ensure that we do not see taxes increased on any working American. And even Keynesian economists have said that during a difficult economic time, increasing taxes is the bad formula for economic recovery. So I believe that we can do this. You know, I was meeting with a group of mayors here day before yesterday and here in Southern California, and they were talking about, one of them in particular, just this uncertainty that is there, which has played a big role in a hesitation on the part of many people who would be job creators from proceeding.
As you look ahead, though, one of the mandates, if you will, that seemed to come across yesterday, and certainly some of the Tea Party candidates, was for clean amendments, for no more earmarks, plenty of time for members to read legislation before they vote. The Rules Committee obviously plays a large part in all of those things.
Those are all priorities that I have, Neil. And in fact, if you look at the publication that we put together, the document called The Wrong Way Congress, which you can get at rulesrepublican.house.gov, you'll see that we focused not only on the fact that we have just, we're in the process of completing, very sadly, the single most closed Congress in the 221-year history of the Republic. We've gone through this entire Congress without a single bill in the House of Representatives being considered under an open amendment process. And that meant that Democrats and Republicans alike have been denied the opportunity to participate. And one of the priorities that Speaker Boehner is going to have, and I've been working with him on this, is to ensure that we have more open rules than we had when I was privileged to be chairman of the Rules Committee in the past. And certainly, I mean, if we have one open rule, we will have had more than we've had in this past Congress. But, you know, we want to move ahead, and we want to make sure that there is, in fact, an opportunity for members to read the bill, as you said, Neil, that there's an opportunity for us to have the kind of free-flowing debate that the American people deserve rather than having this process closed down.
We're talking with Congressman David Dreyer, who represents the 26th district in California?
You know, there's so many in California, Neil, I get confused myself. So I represent the suburbs of Los Angeles.
And he will may have some company after the redistricting. But anyway, political junkie Ken Rudin is also with us. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Ken?
Congressman, when you were first elected in 1980 with Ronald Reagan, you ran on a platform of limited government, things like that. And yet by the time the voters voted out the Republican control of Congress in 2006, there were complaints about bloated government and wasteful spending and all the things that the Republicans blamed Democrats for. Coming into the majority in 2011, what lessons did you learn from your defeats, the Republicans' defeats of 2006 and 2008?
You know, it's a great question, Ken, and I will tell you, I don't believe that we ever did shift away from that vision that was put forward by Ronald Reagan. If you look at the last few years of the Bush administration, with the exception of defense, homeland security, and veterans, we actually were able to see real cuts in spending take place. But we could have cut more.
There were earmarks, right?
And there was Medicare Part D.
You know, there have been earmarks since the beginning of time, but they're not going to be earmarks anymore. And I think that, and I mean, to get into the big debate on earmarks, we all know what percentage of the budget that is, and we know about the debate on the constitutional responsibility that members of the House have for the power of the purse. But having said that, we know that perception is reality, and if you look at members of Congress who have horribly abused the process of earmarks, we know that we can't go down that road, and so we're not going to go down that road. And I believe, Ken, that we have an opportunity. We've had a 92% increase in non-defense discretionary spending take place. So whatever took place in the years before, it pales in comparison to what we've gone through, and we want to do everything that we can to reverse that, and I believe that we can. I think we can have a serious discussion about entitlement reform. I think that we can focus on job creation and work in a bipartisan way, taking the John F. Kennedy, Ronald Reagan model for economic growth, and ultimately increase the flow in revenue of revenues to the federal treasury.
And it's if the mandate is to work on jobs, what can the Congress do, in your mind, to help speed up the recovery?
Well, I think that the single most important thing that we can do now, Neil, is to ensure that we don't see those job creators or any Americans face a tax increase. I think that that will do more right now to get it going. The second thing that we should do is, you know, the president has, in his State of the Union message this year, talked very strongly, and I praised him for this, about the need for us to deal with opening up markets. He's getting ready to go to Asia. He wants to do that, and he's called for this export council to focus on increasing, doubling exports, he says. Well, as he calls for that, the single most important thing that he could do is ensure that we work together in a bipartisan way to pass the Panama, Colombia, and what would be the largest bilateral free trade agreement in the history of the world, the U.S.-Korea Free Trade Agreement, so that we can sell more U.S. goods and services around the world. 96% of the world's consumers are outside of our borders. There is a market there, and there are many countries that are looking to us to provide that global leadership. And since it hasn't happened, unfortunately, in the past 2 years, I think we have a chance to do that now.
Congressman Daryl Issa, who is expected to chair the Oversight Committee, said he expects to flood the White House with subpoenas. You've talked about working together with Democrats, working together with the White House. Is that the right way to proceed?
Well, I don't know about flooding the White House with subpoenas. I do know this, and you and Ken understand this very well. There is a constitutional responsibility that we have for oversight, and congressional oversight is something that was to be expected. It has been lacking in the past Congress, and I won't say that it's only happened. I wish we'd had more oversight from the legislative branch over the Bush administration than we did have. So I think that there's going to be a chance for us to do that. We need to have increased oversight so that we can be successful at reining in this dramatic expansion that we've seen in government. I think that's going to be a very important tool for us to deal with that.
Congressman Dreyer, thanks very much for your time today. And
again, great to be with you both.
Congratulations on your reelection.
Thank you very much, Neil.
David Dreyer, Republican from California, likely the next chairman of the House Rules Committee. Ken Rudin will stay with us, and we're going to be looking ahead not just to the next Congress, but to the next election, to 2012, when we come back from a short break. What changes do you expect? We have split lines today. Republicans, call 800-344-3893. Democrats, 800-344-3864. All of you can send us email, talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.